in a stock deal. They trusted somebody.
You better direct the conversation.
Well, Mr. Pauling, you said you were in Skagway when Mr. Bookwalder...
He was just a kid on the section.
All right. In 1935, when I went there in May, there was a Presbyterian minister, a missionary named Frederick Clare Coper, who later went to Barrow and spent quite a few years there. In fact, Clare Coper was there when Will Rogers and Wiley Post crashed. Mm-hmm. But there was a White Pass pilot who crashed a plane with a couple passengers up in the pass that previous winter, and Vern came down and replaced him as a pilot. They got a new trimotor plane. And Vern told me that he had spent more time in the air that year than he did on the ground.
Holy smoke.
It's back and forth.
That was, what year was that? 1935. 35.
Mm-hmm. It was my first time in Alaska.
We came to Skagway in 34.
In the winter, was it?
No, we came in the spring.
I see.
We come up to fly for Clyde Wan. He came down to get me in June. In 34.
Did he start flying for the White Pass in 35?
No, 34.
Uh-huh. I see.
Yeah. Well, that's when he went out to get the Ford trimotor, and he brought me and the boy up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I think was it next year that Lawrence Muehlheisen cracked up in the summit?
I think it was in January.
Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, because... Have you seen this issue of the journal?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it tells about it in there also.
Oh, what edition is that? What
last month? Year.
It's 73.
Oh. 73.
The talk tells about the...
Well, it's mostly about Clyde Wan.
Oh, I see.
Well, you remember him.
No?
No? Warren came up to apply for him at first in January, the end of January.
It's about Clyde Wan.
And many of the other Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Then Lawrence Muehlheisen came up to fly for Clyde.
Well, when you went to Skagway, excuse me, when you went into Skagway, had you been living in Seattle or?
Do what?
When you first came to Alaska, where did you come from?
Portland.
Portland.
Vancouver, across the river from Portland.
Mm-hmm. When did you learn to fly?
Oh, Spokane. And I was in the Army Reserve for a long time.
I see.
But see, I wasn't just been flying airlines and stuff before I come to Skagway.
Oh.
I was a seasoned pilot.
Yeah.
And had been flying for years before I ever come to Skagway.
I see.
Or if I wouldn't have stayed there, the damn windy place. But
when did you first fly?
1919. Yes.
Were you trained in the Army Air Corps?
What?
Did you take training with the Army?
I was monkeying around with airplanes ever since I could, you know, and I didn't get the first training. It was Army pilots, but they weren't supposed to give me time.
Oh, I see.
One of them things.
So you first started to fly in 1919.
Yes.
And then you went into commercial flying.
Well, what we called barnstorming. There was no airlines or nothing thought of yet, see. And
what about that bi-wing?
That was in 24. That was my airplane. And I flew that, and my sister that was here was sick. She and I flew that down from Spokane to Portland, Oregon that same year, and Esther was living in Vancouver there. So, we went on down to Roseburg, and my folks lived in Bandon, Oregon at that time. Mm-hmm. So I took them. But that's Danny Greco, a little Italian.
Greco? Danny Greco?
How do you pronounce it?
Yes,
my
Greco.
And he was a wing walker or stuff. And I used to take that same airplane and put a rope ladder on the landing gear and go over to Jensen Beach and take him off. And they give me $50 for that. I take him off a speedboat.
Oh.
With a speedboat going about 50 miles an hour. And I was a little, I could slow down about that. And
he'd climb up the ladder?
Yeah, and wave his hand and swing over the crowd. And I go just across the river and land and get $50 for that.
What did he get?
Oh, I don't know. I never asked him. But he was a plenty, and because he wouldn't do it for nothing.
Oh, yeah, that's a dangerous thing. Then did you fly in the... You must have been one of the very early pilots in the Pacific.
Well, West. I flew the first air mail from Portland to the Seattle and Frisco Los Angeles run. It was known as the Pacific Air Transport, 15th day of September 1926. And I tried to give the Portland, Oregon, the picture of Mayor Baker and Postmaster Jones giving me the first mail sack. And they said if I blew it up to no expense to them, and they could accept it. I thought it was history, you know.
Oh, of course it is.
Well, they don't want it. They don't. The younger generation don't want it. So I was talking to Orrin Hudson just now out the field, and he thought that I ought to go and start writing and to get a pass for Esther and I. The 50 years, that'd be 2 years from now, see, that I flew the first mail.
Yeah.
And that ship there, that Fokker, is the first cabin ship to, commercial ship to come in Seattle, and that's when I hauled Bill Boeing and them in to pick out Boeing Field.
Mm-hmm. Where did Bill Boeing, did he live in that area?
He owned the Boeing airplane factory at Seattle, and he had a yacht. When he wasn't in the yacht, he was somewhere around Seattle. Mm-hmm. I never knew where his residence was. But see, he had a yacht built, and the fellow that built the yacht started making wooden floats for Christofferson, which Christofferson was one of the first pilots around Portland. Mm-hmm. And he made a float for that, and then they made floats for the Navy during the war in this old, on Lake Washington, the old Boeing building that they had to, when they built the yacht, and that's how he got into the airplane business. And Boeing himself, and what was the... his pilot's name, Esther. I knew him. Herb Mutter had the first airmail contract in the United States from Vancouver to Seattle to Victoria, and they'd meet the boats that come from the Orient and get the mail a day sooner in, or take it from the, after the boat left a day, they'd fly up and take the mail up and catch the boat going to the Orient. Mm-hmm. That was the first mail contract. And then the next one come along is in 26, and Varney started one, and he couldn't, he had water-cooled engines and he had trouble, so we lent him, our outfit, lent him our air-cooled engines, then we had to get some from the Navy. And we didn't get started till the 15th day of September 1926, and I flew the first trip.
And that was from?
Well, we were supposed to fly from Seattle to L.A., but we railed the mail, and I picked it up in Vancouver at 6:45 in the morning and take it to Medford. And then, or sometime clear into Frisco, or then they'd, and then I'd turn around and come back. Then I'd fly clear to, from Medford to Seattle with the mail, and then back to Vancouver to pick it up. They'd rail it. See, it would be night flight, and that's pretty bad country for night flying.
Yeah. In those days.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't have no radio or nothing.
Say, Vern, you mentioned Herb Mutter and Boeing and you together. Herb Mutter, did you know that Herb Mutter grew up in Nome? His dad brought his family up here in the Gold Rush, and little Herb used to sell popcorn in the saloons and sing songs.
Well, see, Smith, Stevens, the man that had the world's record for the balloon, was a Nome boy. And Doolittle was a Nome boy.
Right.
And you say Mutter was?
Yes, Mutter. I have pictures of both of them when they were just little kids in school, 5 or 6 years old. And Mutter was a commander in the Navy Air Corps at Sitka during World War II,
was
working.
Well, this guy here didn't seem to have any education, and they couldn't get along very good, but he sure could fly, and he could figure out what was the matter with an airplane. But
right. Well, that's the same Herb Mutter.
It is?
Yeah.
Well, he died in Salt Lake. He was shoveling snow and went and laid down on the couch, and an ulcer broke or something.
Yeah.
Is the same guy?
Yes, same one. Lucy, my wife, knew him in Ketchikan.
Now, here I'm bringing up the rear. I'm a Nome.
Yeah. Small world, isn't
it? I'll show you those pictures pretty soon and give you one of Doolittle.
Well, he was a test pilot for Boeing for a long time. Mm-hmm. The Navy brought a bunch of ships into Seattle, and they'd do something, and he'd go up with one of them old Boeings with A7A Hall Scott engine and a four-cylinder, and outdo them. Yeah, he was good.
Well, tell me, when you worked in Skagway for the White Pass, where did you fly?
Well, to Dawson City mostly. The mail up the Stewart River and Dawson City. Mm-hmm. But see, when I first flew into Dawson, there was no airport there. We landed on a gravel bar.
Mm-hmm.
Then they made the airport. And it's 6-7 miles from town.
Yeah, the good airport there in
Dawson.
There's a good airport at Dawson now.
Yeah. Well,
I just was in Dawson.
Huh.
My husband and I went from Lake Bennett down to Dawson on the water.
Oh.
This in July.
Oh, my goodness.
My husband is the kind of man who wants to work all the time. So I got him to go on a vacation with me. So I got him out there on the Yukon River where there's no telephones, and he couldn't escape. So he had a nice rest.
River is kind of dangerous for sweepers if you're drifting.
Yeah.
You got to stay in the middle. A lot of people, I understand, would go to sleep, you know, a nice warm day, and then drift ashore, and then a tree hanging out, and they'll drown them.
Yeah, we drifted quite a ways, but we drifted part of the time. We were with some other people.
Oh.
There were four boats, so we kept awake.
Uh-huh. Well, one time the Canadians were very bullheaded about saying there was a cable right where the White River comes in, a stranded cable come down on the old landline, and I looked, it was coming down in a big rainstorm or snowstorm, and I looked out and just about 5 feet from the tip of my wing with this cable coming down. And so I reported it
FAA. FAA?
No, it'd be the same as our Federal Communications or something, see?
FCC.
I reported to them, and they said, You have no business down there or something like that. But anybody going down the Yukon River, and that point stuck out, and this cable went clear across the river, and off of the top of this mountain. And anybody could have got into it. But I stayed away from there after that. But I don't know what But I was always, anything was dangerous like that, put some rubber balls on it or something so you could see it, see? But a cable no bigger than your thumb hanging down there, and it was a stranded cable too. You know, it was something that would break easy. I'd hook the wing. Yeah.
You flew mostly Mayo. What? You flew Mayo mostly, or freight?
It was Dawson. At first, my trips were that I would take gasoline in and enough to come back out, because gasoline was $1 a gallon. It was 18 cents in Skagway. And I'd take it to Dawson and bring the dredge crews out. But that didn't pay too good, for the reason is it's a one-way haul. In the spring, you're taking people in, and all that 8 years, I only hauled maybe five people out in the spring of the year, and that was somebody got steel in their eye or something, you know, emergency. But in the spring, you're taking people in and coming back empty. In the fall, you're going in empty and coming out loaded. So, but we got the mail, and then the mail paid, you see. Mm-hmm. So the mail, we go down one day and lay over a day so the people could answer the letter and then come back the third day, see.
That was nice of you to wait for them to answer.
Well, see, we took the mail contract away from sleds and dogs, not dogs, but caterpillars.
Yeah,
and they were 7 days and seven nights getting down there, and I'd take about 2 hours and 45 minutes, I'd take them down.
And how many years did you fly that route?
Eight.
8 years.
It was a little over eight, yeah.
Did you ever have any emergencies where you had to sit down overnight?
Oh, a lot of them, but it was weather or something, you know. I lost one engine in that length of time, time and gears, but I overhauled all my own engines, took care of my own planes, and I had very little trouble. Everybody else was having it, but I'd been flying a good many years before I come there, see.
Yes. What kind of planes did you fly?
Ford Trimotor.
Between Skagway and Dawson?
Yeah. It was a ship that we'd bought from Ruxell, a man that had the two-speed rear end for the Model T Ford, and I bought it from him. It had been owned by the Standard Oil, and that's the one Esther flew to Alaska, and she's about the third woman to ever fly to Alaska. And the company, White Pass, said, "Oh, you shouldn't take her." I said, "Well, hell, ain't we going to fly people all the time and make a living at it?" And I said, "Well, what's the difference?" So she climbed in with me, and we come.
From Skagway, where did you go after you left Skagway?
Oh, I went out to Idaho, and then I bought an amphib, and I done charter work. Then I come back up here.
Did you come to Nome then?
Nome, no. We do. We got the gold fever and come to Nome about 7 years ago.
Oh, I see. Where did you live in Alaska before Nome?
Well, when we come back, we was in Anchorage, Juneau for a while. I worked for Alaska Coastal.
I see.
And then I went with the Fish and Wildlife. And I was getting, the people thought I was too old to fly, and I was running engine shops, overhauling engines.
How many years ago was that, Vern?
What?
How many years ago was that they thought you were too old
when
to
we
fly?
Well, when we come back to Alaska to stay, I come up every summer, but Esther didn't, 21 years ago, 22 years ago.
1951.
She'd be eligible for that $100 per horse.
All right. Last summer he flew me over to his mine. So he's still a good pilot. He said, he told me, if you want to live to be an old man, fly like an old woman, whatever that is.
Well, where were you born? Where were you born?
Born? Corvallis, Oregon.
Okay. What's your birth date?
Huh?
When were you born?
When?
Yeah.
19th day of November, 1892. I'll be 82 years old the 19th of November.
19th of November, 1892, in Corvallis?
Mm-hmm. My father was an engineer on a stern wheel steamboat.
Is that right?
Yeah, run up from Portland to up through the locks at Oregon mm-hmm. City and then on mm-hmm. up Salem and then Corvallis.
Well, Mrs. Bookwalder, were you born in Oregon too? Or?
No.
Her? No, she's a Missourian, can't you tell that?
She doesn't look like a Missourian to me.
I couldn't tell it.
Well, do you still have mining property in this area?
Oh, over here, yeah. We got two places, one out 50 miles and the other one right 10 miles from town. But I'm getting too old to work that. It's too hard to work.
It's very hard work.
But we... this ground that we got had been mined, part of it, been mined with horses and scraper and pole riffles, and the riffles run lengthways. Now they, what they call a Hungarian riffle, they run crossways.
Yeah.
We catch everything in the first 8-10 feet in the sluice box. But Esther was running the sluice box for me a couple of 3 years ago, and then she broke her leg and real bad, and she's never been over there since. See, so I don't know how they expected to catch the gold, because these pieces was lengthways, and the rocks had to catch in between, and then the bottom of them was worn way out where the rocks had slid.
Yeah,
and. That's the part of the ground we're mining, and it's real rich yet.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, but the what they call the Hungarian riffle is the angle iron or crossways, yeah. See?
Mm-hmm.
And that makes an eddy behind each.
In Nome, have you done very much flying in the Nome?
Just for myself.
Just for yourself.
Yeah, I got a little PA-12 out here.
Mm-hmm.
And
you still fly?
Yeah, when the weather's good enough, I'm a fair weather file now.
Well, you must have one of the early licenses in the United States.
It's number 2530.
2530?
Yeah, they're up in the million now.
Does anybody else in Alaska have one that low?
I don't know. Maybe Noel Wien.
I talked to John Cross in Kotzebue the other day.
Oh, I don't know. I've met him, but I don't know too much about
him. He learned to fly in 18... In 1918, he went in the Army Air Corps, and he flew ever since then.
So. Well, when did he learn?
1918.
I got this license in 27. I was flying mail. I got mine in 1927. There weren't too many. And we would have had the guys flying scheduled. Would have had a lower number, but they went out and picked up all the barnstormers first, the guys was on the beaches and hauling people, so they picked them up and rode with them to see if they could fly, and had a written examination, but then they come to us last. I remember I'm 25-30, and George Buck was flying for, I was flying for the Pacific Air Transport. George Buck was flying for Varney Airlines, and so his is 2531. So they went from Portland up to Pasco and start picking them boys up. They were scheduled pilots, you know, flying every day. Mm-hmm. So that's how I knew that.
Do you know who in the United States might have had the first license?
Huh?
Know who might have had license number one or two?
Oh, I don't know who that would be. I never heard. But I have got a license here signed with one of the Wright brothers.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
But
that is an unusual thing.
I think it's which is it, Orville or which
yeah.
one? One of them lived longer than the other.
And Orville lived longer.
Orville Wright?
Yeah.
And was he an inspector for...
No, no. If you wanted to... How do you say that?
Participate in yes, sport flying or endurance.
Sport flying, like racing and stuff. In the early days, you had to join this association. And they give me a dope on it. If I went to Italy or anything, it introduced me.
I see.
The United States is way behind on aviation. See, Wright brothers had to go to France. That's why an aeroplane is called monoplane, is one wing, biplane is two, and triplane is for three wing. And the Wright brothers had to get their backing in France.
Their financial backing.
Yes, because the United States didn't pay no attention to them. Because they wanted Stanley or some of that guy that had that steam...
Stanley
yeah,
steamer.
Yeah.
Automobile.
Yeah, he was trying. Not Stanley. What was his name? Doc Langley or something.
Yeah, Doc Langley.
Yeah, he had a rig. And the government has spent a lot of money on him, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it didn't turn out. So, but the Wright brothers really done the flying.
I don't
know. I'm the 82nd airmail pilot, see, commercial pilot.
82nd.
Isn't that something?
Holy smoke. This is the Post Office Department Contract Airmail Service from Washington. I'm just going to read this. This is to certify that Vernon Bookwalter has been duly examined and found qualified to pilot aircraft carrying United States mail. And signed by, let's see, I can't read that signature.
Well, that's been wet in my hip pocket so many times,
yeah.
You can't already see the Post Office Department seen that I was under the first 100, so they wrote and asked me if I'd like to have it for a souvenir, and that's how I got it,
you
back.
Got it back.
It might be Henry Glass.
What
yeah.
is the object
of that?
Same
it?
Yes.
Looks like Henry.
It's written rapidly.
And it's number 82. This certificate expires December 31st, 1926, or immediately upon demand. This certificate is not transferable. 1926. And it was canceled, expired by the time limit. And this one is the...
That's Oregon, isn't it?
Uh-oh, this is in French. I have to leave it there.
This one is signed by Orville Wright.
Now, so is this one.
Is both mm-hmm.
Okay, this one is United States of America Annual Sporting License issued to Vernon Bookwalter, Corvallis, Oregon, November 19th, 1923?
Six, 7, I think.
Looks like an 18.
It says...
That's the state of
issued
Oregon.
Issued 1927.
Oregon.
It says 1893, but that's his birthplace.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was 1892.
Date of birth.
I found out after I had to dig up the family Bible and found out I was a year older than I thought I was. And
you're actually born in 1892.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Actually born in 1892.
Well, I had to have a second name. And I was Vern Bookwalter up till I was 50, 60 years old. And then when the war come along, I dug up the family Bible, and I was Charles Vernon. So I've been going by Charles Vernon ever since.
And this was issued in 1927, license number 51.
But I had to dig up, I had to have the second name to hold my radio license. Don't make sense, but it you know, the right way and the wrong way and the Army way and
right.
And the FAA.
And the FAA. Well, you actually have three things signed by, well, no, two things signed by Orville Wright. That is, one I just read was the annual sporting license issued, that was at number 551 in 1927. And this one is the National Aeronautic Association of USA. And this was issued August 30th, 1927. That's signed by Orville Wright also. And this is Oregon State Board of Aeronautics, registration number 6. This is to certify that Vernon Bookwalter has fulfilled all the requirements of the Oregon State Board of Aeronautics for an aviator pilot and is registered as such, dated August 12, 1926.
In 1926, there was an issue of the National Geographic that had a long article with pictures on the United States Airmail, and it
sure canceled that, didn't they? Looked
he's at, probably
with a machine, and then.
So, where did you read that?
I was in Juneau when I read it.
Okay.
I was teaching the fifth grade, and we happened to have this.
That was the National Geographic?
1926. So if you get that volume over at the University of Alaska, you'll find a very fine article on the airmail. And maybe Vern is in it. I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, that'd be interesting to go read.
Well, see, I got a letter from the post office department and said that they seen that I was under the first 100. If I'd like to have it for a souvenir. So I wrote to him, but I've lost that letter, I got the thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, those are real
precious.
Precious, you betcha.
Yes, they are. They're a part of aviation history, those things.
Yeah,
They're a part of aviation history. They should be in an archive like the University of Alaska or someplace where they'll be kept, you know.
Yeah.
And displayed too once in a while.
Well, I'm going to don't make it a hell of a lot of
difference. You'll see that they're put there, will you? I don't know whether it'll have to be in the will or not. We don't have any provisions made for such things. So, and our pictures and so forth.
Maybe as the pioneer president, you could just write up something for them. You know, for their pictures and anything of historic value, because that's the main reason for the pioneers is to preserve these things, because somebody, you know, they're very valuable to you, but not valuable to someone who would come from Florida or Georgia. Some people don't care about historic things.
What's that?
Some people don't care about historic things.
Well,
they throw them away.
Well, they look at the Portland, Oregon, young punks down there. Here, Mayor Baker, Postmaster Jones, giving me the first airmail sign. I can't say that I hauled the first letter from Portland to Vancouver. Lincoln Beach, he did with a balloon.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Did you know Edna Christopherson?
No.
When she was... that was before your time, too.
Yes,
you know,
it was.
But you had heard of her.
It's a familiar name, right? Mm-hmm.
But she was from Portland also, and her husband built and flew an airplane.
Was she a school teacher?
Well, you know, you can't give pictures out.
I think she had...
You never get them back.
No. You should have a negative made of that picture. You should have a negative made of that picture.
Can that be done?
You can't? Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
it can.
Well, all the pictures I got, somebody took them and gave them to me. Just like that Mount Hood there. The Army was taking the movie because that was airmail plane, see. Mm-hmm. But I'm way off course. I'm off course 50, 60 miles there to get that, mm-hmm. see. But
the University of Alaska Archives, they have a good department there. And they can take a photograph and take a picture of it and make a negative.
Oh.
No, and they have a setup there where they can do that.
No doubt that is what Bond has done of several of his of the pictures that he has taken. He's taking a lot of pictures of
birds,
so we have a whole drawer full of
aircraft. It was all... You're through talking? Yeah. It was all uphill for a pilot for a good many years. If you wanted an airport, you had one. There were two high tension lines crossed. Why, that'd be the place they'd give you for an airport. See? And it was that way all the way through. And always some company you work for, there's always a smart office guy. Yeah. Why, if you can't do it, we ought to get somebody that can, see? But Mr. Wheeler knew. And what I found out afterwards, what's his name?
Was that V.I. Hahn?
Cliff Rogers.
Rogers, yeah.
His uncle was a leading doctor in my hometown, and they had all the dope on me before they ever hired me. Mm-hmm. They knew I was a drinker or didn't and everything, see, but he was.
Those men were executives in the White Pass and Yukon Railroad at Skagway, and who was it that got you? Who was it that hired you, went out to see you? Rogers, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Well, I went out to get my own airplanes. I had two. I had the old Duck, the Amphib, and the Ryan. And I went out on the old Victoria. Mm-hmm. And I was coming down the gangplank, and here was a guy with a sheep-lined coat, and he says, "Bookwalter here?" And I said, "Jesus, what have I done? That looks like law to me." It looked like a deputy sheriff. And he says, "I'm with the White Pass." He says, "I want you to come up the room and talk to you." And I says, I didn't care to him. I didn't want to be smart, but I says, "If you want to talk to me, you come to Vancouver tomorrow." And next morning, by golly, they were down there, drove the Rio down. And he says, we're going into the airplane business. And what would be the kind of ship? I said, well, to tell you the truth, Ford Trimotor would be the best thing for what I know. I'd been flying them for years before that. So I says, they get in and out of a small place. But you hurt hell out of me. I says, because I can't afford one. And, you know, I bought one for the White Pass for $2,400 in Tacoma, and it'd be worth $50,000 today.
Yeah. Is that the same one you flew for eight years?
No, I got that other one from Ruxell, in Grand Canyon, Arizona.
In Grand Canyon? That's my old stomping grounds.
It is?
Yeah.
Well, that's Ruxell had an outfit there, and he hauled tourists out over the canyon, and he had to travel there in this Ford, and then he went in to start a little airline somewhere down around Phoenix or someplace. I don't know what, I never paid any attention to him. But the Model T went out of business, so he quit selling them rear ends.
Vern used to fly the 247 Boeing and the Condor also into Fairbanks, possibly.
The 247 Boeing?
That we got that in from Pennsylvania Central at Pittsburgh.
And you flew that for the White Pass?
Yes. Yeah, that was a good airplane. But the door was too small for heavy freight.
Mm-hmm. But did you fly into Fairbanks very much?
Oh, just when some... like the union had a upper or something wrong, or some guy that Wheeler knew for years ago or something, said maybe they come up and go out on the boat, fly them over.
Or the
most generally the curling team.
The Dawson curling team?
Yes. Or they got an old croc that they shoved down. And somebody runs along and sweeps in front.
And the Condor, too, it was a biplane.
The Condor?
Yeah, the Curtis Condor was a big ship. It was four wings like that Jenny up there. And it was real fast. We bought it from the American Airlines, and I brought it up. And it landed real slow, and and it got up and moved right along if I kept the wings waxed. But if it didn't keep them waxed, they got dirty, well, it slowed right up.
Yeah.
But
do you remember the names of any of the Dawson people you flew from Dawson to Fairbanks, the curlers?
No, but I do know one gal there. That her name was, she worked for the White Pass, Swartz. And she charged everybody 25 cents to go to the potty, and she never split with me yet.
Where was that? In Dawson?
No, she lived in Dawson, but she wasn't in the curling team going there. She sat there on the stewardess seat, charged everybody to go in this. So, but I never got my 12 and a half cents split.
She had a racket going up there.
Huh? What's that?
She had a racket going
up
there.
Yeah. Oh, she was just a clown anyhow. See?
Yeah. Did you ever spend much time in Fairbanks?
Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Well, no, just two or three days at a time.
You didn't live there?
No, no.
So you've mostly lived in Nome and Skagway and southeastern too?
Oh, down the Kenai there too, you know. We homesteaded, see.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, well, after I got 70, you can't work for civil service anymore, so we went down and homesteaded. We just sold the homestead. You know, we got fined $21 and what was
1 cent
for not telling the government that we were going to pay them $1,000 in tax. We didn't tell them, and 90 days after we sold the place, and then they fined us for not doing it. What the hell is this country coming to?
An estimated income.
Is that right?
There was nothing dishonest about it. They had paid their income tax at the end of the year, but
we paid it.
The government
told them that we'd sold it and we paid the income.
Well, you know, if they'd want me to go to another war, I'd tell them to go to hell. They can't take care of what they've got, what we've got for them at one time.
What did you do during World War II? Were you still flying for White
Pass? Well, I went out to Spokane, and they were hollering for pilots to ferry this stuff to New York or someplace, you know. And I was, how long? 6 months or 90 days or something, too old?
Yeah, it was about
3 months
too old.
I was 2 or 3 months. All this multi-engine experience, see, and all that. But they said, you guys, we're going to teach women to do this. And I said, that's the time to do it. That's the thing to do. All my experience don't mean nothing. Why, let a woman have it. And then the women started cracking them up pretty bad. See, I guess there's two of them that really made it to New York or something. And left an airplane here and there. So, then they start writing to me, and I just turn the letter over and write on the other side, 6 months too old. The hell with them.
So what'd you do? Go back to Alaska?
Well, no. One summer I had that Sikorsky, and I went down to park and hauled tours. You know, people just sightseeing.
McKinley Park?
Huh?
McKinley Park? Or?
Just people... float plane on down the water, and I had a dock there, and then people come down and charge so much and take them around over and back.
But he had gone to Alaska almost every summer. He ferried ships up and then
take fishing parties out, and
flew up there also.
There was a fellow by the name of Kelly that I took to Great Slave Lake, and there was another fellow, I forget his name now. And he is the inventor of this submarine detector. And Kelly had bought some of them cats that fell off of the barge on Great Slave Lake. And they were wanting to locate them. So I flew that crew up there. And what they should have done is let me go back to Edmonton and got about a mile of telephone wire and put some weights on it and dragged. But I didn't have much faith in that. I think you had to be wide over to get this reading or bounce back. See, we did find a galleon road grader and a bunch of pipe that fell through the ice or stuff, but we didn't find the cats. And the guy that was running the boat, a Canadian, that we fell off of, he was giving us a bum steer. He wanted him himself. So the lake is very shallow, but it's a treacherous lake. It, after a big storm, the wave, like here, for 2 days, they keep coming in, but they're so slick you can't see them. So I'd fly, when I went up to Fort Resolution, and then I flew out of there, I'd fly around one of those little islands and see which one that the waves were coming up on, and then get on the opposite side and land. Mm-hmm. But see, now, a lot of the guys wouldn't know that, see,
sure.
And they'd crack up, see. But I've been flying boats since 1920. I got a multi-engine rating here in my pocket. For
pontoon.
For land and sea.
I see. I think he's got as much or more experience in the air than the weans put together. Sounds like that.
The bottom one there, see the number 2530?
Number 2530.
That's fighting dog.
What?
That's fighting dog.
Well, when a man's been flying 48 or 50 years, you know, he's seen about everything there is to see about it.
Well,
with the machines involved.
Well, this 5 years this year
that he's been flying. This Dave Logg and I was in 24 and 25. We was flying for the forest.
Have his license also.
55 years it'll be.
This year.
Spring,
this last spring.
This past spring.
Yes.
You've been flying for 55 years.
Well, they told me 7 years was the average life of a pilot.
That's got to be some kind of a record.
Well, you know, I left the liquor alone. Yeah, a lot of these guys would go out the next day after been on a big party.
Yeah.
And just if you...
They've buried a lot.
Huh?
They've buried a lot of pilots.
Yes. I'd be barging along, you know, maybe 120 miles, 30 miles an hour, and then about 300 yards ahead of you, you see a mountain, you know, bad snowstorm. You can see down and back, but you can't see ahead. It's all coming towards you.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, then you just have to, right now, you can't hesitate. I done that with Jack Dempsey going through the Stampede Pass one time. He kind of gave me a sour look, but I've turned so fast sometimes. I wonder sometimes if the heavy people wouldn't go through the floor, you know, the seat. But either that or hit something.
Yeah. Did in your flying, did you ever meet Will Rogers or Wiley Post? Did you ever meet them?
I met Will Rogers, and he used to come to Portland, and he'd hire Tex Rankin, and Tex Rankin and I used to be partners, and he had a school there at Mox Bottom, and he anywhere he could fly, he flew. Mm-hmm. Will Rogers did, mm-hmm. but I never flew him, but Tex did, but Wiley Post. I just seen him at a distance, but I didn't push myself on him because he was a little bit overbearing at mm-hmm. times. His publicity went to
his head.
That's Will Rogers. Will Rogers?
No.
I saw Wiley Post in the cross-country races back in about 1931 or two, something like that, when I was a teenager in Oklahoma. I grew up with Will Rogers' younger relatives, his nieces and nephews.
Is that right?
Simmons over at Carcross wanted an engine one time, and I seen an engine advertised to make a bid on it. and I bid on it, and it was Mrs. Rogers was selling his stuff. So they put it in that old Fokker, and they give it the gun, and it went straight up. And they flew that engine all till, you know, time run out. And they sent it back to the Pratt Whitney factory in Canada. And boy, they come back with a letter. It had S1, D1 pistons in it. It was all hopped up for the Winnie Mae, see? And, you know, it was putting out maybe 200 horsepower more than it was supposed to. But it stood up. What if they run it out of Carcross to Atlin and back and forth with the mail? If it stood up for two or three years, what was they howling about? Yeah. But so they was engine built up for the Winnie Mae.
When you flew from Skagway into Dawson, were there other airplanes flying?
No.
Were you just about the only?
The second year or so, Simmons at Carcross and Watson, the pilot, they bought a ship from the Treadwell mine or something, FC2W, something, Fairchild. And then they got an old Fokker from the smelter at Trail, B.C., and then they got an old Ford that, they cracked up the Ford, and I don't know what happened to Fokker. I think they cracked it up, too. And Fairchild, they traded it in on the Ford. And they were running back and forth, but they... Not like we had the offices in Dawson and one thing or another. Mm-hmm. But the
well, when you were in Skagway, and you too, Mr. Pauling, there must have been some of the old timers from the Stampede still around.
Well, yes, but I can't remember some of their names. They all knew me. I went about 20 years ago now. I went to Dawson and we drove the Oldsmobile over. Mm-hmm. And a little kid come along about so high, and he said, "Are you a tourist?" And I said, "No, I used to fly in here." He says, "You wouldn't be Mr. Bookwalter." I says, "Yes." He says, "My father and mother used to ride with you."
Oh,
he was born since I'd been there, see?
Yeah.
But
what family was that?
No, I can't tell you right now, but...
I have the names of some of those old-timers at home. I put a paper out there one summer. There's Word Aiden was a doc.
Oh.
Foreman, Word Aiden, the Warfinger.
He was at Skagway.
Yeah, Skagway.
He was an only old pup to
He was all right. But there was Martin Itchen, who you've heard of him, perhaps. He's the old boy who went down to see Mae West, my first landlord. There was old Frank. What was old Frank's name that used to be a checker for down on the wharf for the White Pass?
Oh, I don't know, but I remember who you're talking
about.
See, Godding was an engineer, and Charlie DePuzzi, and all them, see.
I talked with Mrs. Rapuzzi in Skagway.
Huh?
Mrs. Rapuzzi, you know her? She used to teach school.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the big fat one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she's not big. She's not too tall, but she's kind of chubby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's
married to George, isn't she?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, one of the young boys or younger boys.
Yeah.
No, Charlie's brother.
Oh, Charlie's brother.
Mm-hmm.
She was
the one that
was the machinist up in the... He was the best machinist I ever run into. I'd have him make something, a tool for work on them engines, and it had to be perfect. I always wanted him get him in the aviation, and I don't think I can do good enough work.
Yeah.
And but he He was pretty sharp, but he had very poor education, but he was real sharp.
Well, the Mrs. Rapuzzi and her husband run a little museum in Skagway, mm-hmm. the Soapy Smith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, museum. Yeah, well, George was saving old coal stoves and iron. And one time the couple got married and walked across the pass, you know, and we seen, George went with me, and we flew back and forth to this amphib, and here they see where they walked across it, and the time that they'd walked across this kind of a bridge, you know, snow washed out from under, it caved in. Then we'd see their tracks on down, and they had red mackinaws on or something, and they were sitting in that red clay up there, you know, and watching us fly back and forth. Never got up and waved or damn thing. And 2 days of that, we went down to Bennett to get some groceries, and here they were. They come walking in. Oh, we seen you up there, but we didn't know what it was. But the governor, Greening, sent us to look for them because they were way overdue. They were a week overdue.
Oh, I see.
You see, you remember something about that?
No, I don't remember anything.
Well, George was with me, and there was a little cabin there, and them Frenchmen, the years ago, were good with an axe. They beveled them corners in, you know, and we cleaned out this cabin, and he went and, now you go and get a bunch of little spruce trees, and I went and got them, and he break them off and lay them boughs, you know, just like them springs. Yeah. But I said, I'm going to sleep over there, but you're going to fly tomorrow. You got to have a good
took good care of the pilot.
Yeah, so but he made me a beautiful bed, but I felt guilty taking it. But
you know what I did in July? I hiked the Chilkoot Pass.
Done what?
I hiked the Chilkoot Pass.
You did?
This summer.
Them old things up there where the cables used to hang up, still up?
There are still a couple of structures.
Yeah.
But they've been pretty well.
Yeah, be rotten. They're getting pretty old. Did you see some of them graves along the line there where the sand and where the paint was stuck way out, but the rest of the board was ate away pretty much?
No,
there's several.
Where is it?
Getting down near Lindeman Lake.
Oh, Lindeman, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a big graveyard there.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that was a beautiful trip.
Yeah.
I would like to do that again.
You know, the trouble with me is starting up there, my clutch slips when I get.
Father Gallant used to take a trip over there every summer across that back in the 30s.
Over to
earlier.
Bennett?
Right, and earlier than that, but I remembered because it impressed me in 35. Mm-hmm. He took a party over every...
Who was that?
Father Gallant. I think he's the one that kept the interest alive in that trail.
How was the trail when you were over it?
I thought it was in good condition.
Good condition.
There's not any trail lots of places. You just walk over big boulders. But it's clean, and I think the hikers make a concerted effort to keep it picked up and clean. I found one Budweiser beer can. That was up at near Sheep Camp, way up the trail, up near Sheep Camp. So I put it in my backpack, and I carried it over, and I'm going to send it to a friend of mine, and she sends me crazy things every once in a while. So I thought, well, this is a crazy thing to do, is pick up an empty beer can and carry it over the pass.
One thing stands out in my mind, that I was flying into Medford, and we didn't have voice radio, but we had the key. Mm-hmm. So they said for me to stay put in Medford, that the seagulls were walking in Portland. So I seen a balloon go up in Medford, and I went over to the place where this guy was sending this balloon up, and I says, what's this? He says, I'm with the Department of Agriculture. This is a balloon, and it goes up, and it gives me a reading which way the wind's blowing. I says, fine. I says, I'll be here and see you every other day. And he says, who are you? I said, I'm the air mail pilot. And oh, he says, oh, hell. He said, I've been here for 3 months. Nobody's ever asked for the... And so now I'll have to... I can't go fishing anymore. He was there with the Department of Agriculture, but he didn't tell us what he was there for, see? He's taking to write this down every day, but he didn't... And the people he was supposed to be helping out... And the funny thing is... From Seattle to L.A., if you get about 12,000 feet this time of year, you get a 100-mile tailwind. So I went up at Medford and fly for an hour and something and come back down, and I'd only be 30, 40 miles out of Medford. You know, you get above the clouds, see? That's how we found out. And then until he come along, and then...
Bring you another one, honey. I don't want to drop one.
Give that
one
to me?
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I kind of raised a little trouble with his fishing trip.
Move that, and then do you want to just leave your coffee there?
I'll put it down here on this.
Okay,
John, what will you have in yours?
I'll bring just, I like it black. Yes,
barefooted?
Sir.
Barefooted?
Just
okay.
Black.
How about you, Mrs. Dalton?
Just black for me.
Barefooted for you,
too. Barefooted for me, too.
How much you got left on there? None.
Thank you.
It's pretty near off, huh?
Pretty near off.
I was going to tell you about the...